Recording. All right, and we're off. Hi, everybody. My name's Cedric, and this is Ben.
Yes.
And we run this project that we call the Nerdatorium. We thought we'd tell you a little bit about it and, you know, put up a couple podcasts, see if people were interested in what we had to say. And if you guys are, we'll just, you know, make some more podcasts.
Yeah.
So, to give you a little bit of background on the Nerdatorium, we're essentially a seasonal nomadic incubator. So we go from city to city. You know, we'll spend like 3 to 6 months in a specific city working on a project. So we'll dream up some crazy idea, and then we'll try to bring a team of people that we really enjoy, like talented entrepreneurs, together for 3 to 6 months, and we'll go from idea to market with our idea and take a couple months off. So essentially, we think that the traditional model of work is broken.
It's fucked.
Yeah, totally fucked. Like the idea of...
Not to be too strong, but it's almost pathological if you look at it. The way people... It's actually part of their identity, and it really controls a lot of people's... Like, almost everyone's life as an adult is controlled by work, right?
Which is insane. This idea that you sort of, you know, you prepare for work, right? Then you go to work. Then after work, you're exhausted, so you come home and you watch TV to relax from work. And then you pass out, you lose consciousness.
Yeah.
And then you rinse and repeat. And then your weekends, you do a bunch of chores, and maybe you take a day to, like, or even just a couple of hours to relax.
Yeah, and then, or maybe you drink yourself into oblivion to kind of ease the pain, right?
And that's if everything's going right. So if everything's not going right, you know, like in this down economy, what happens when you graduate from college and you don't have a job? You know, your options are really limited these days.
It's especially the options you think you have, right? Because people are brought up in the school system, et cetera, and you are just trained that this is the path you should follow. So people, you know, have a hard time, I think, thinking outside of those bounds. But then once they start to, all of a sudden this whole other world opens up and they see all the possibilities and things like that. So,
yeah. So to give you some background, you know, Ben and I both used to work at Microsoft, and we got really tired of basically waking up, going to work, working on projects that we may or may not have really, you know, passionately believed in. And, you know, we were waiting basically a year for a bonus or some sort of, you know, like, nicely done. You get a small increase in pay.
Yeah. Which, you know, it's really not, it doesn't really have any connection to what you're actually doing day to day, you know? This is just sort of nebulous good job. Whereas, you know, every week you just have to kind of deal with the same grind and you have no real feedback even except for that, which is not very much. So we
started collaborating a while ago. You know, Ben left Microsoft to go work on some analytics stuff, and I stayed at Microsoft and did some collaborating there, which is good. I eventually left Microsoft and started up with some entrepreneurs. I was lucky enough that the startup worked, and I was able to sort of get free from work, and now Ben and I are collaborating on this Nerdatorium idea. And we've gone through one cycle where we went to San Diego. We lived there for about 3-4 months.
Yep.
And we actually worked on 3 projects. We made a movie. Well, we're making a movie. We worked on some storytelling technology, specifically motion controllers and time-lapse devices. And we were basically able to take all these from idea to market, or at least partially to market, pretty quickly.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of a dry run sort of thing where we had two other kind of nerds with us in San Diego. And they really, you know, we got a lot done for 4 people in effectively 3-4 months.
Yeah.
And we learned a ton along the way. So we weren't able to fulfill, I think, the dream all the way, but we were able to work out a ton of the kinks, and I feel like next time around we'll be a very tight kind of organization that really will be able to achieve those goals.
So to clarify what we mean by nerds for all the folks at home, the idea is that instead of offering someone a traditional position where we pay them some amount and then they use that amount to sustain themselves, to pay for their housing, etc., what we do is we actually take care of everything for them. So they'll come to a specific place. We were in an art mansion, essentially, where what we did is we rented a couple of rooms in this really large art collective, and we would just put a couple of beds in a room, and we would bring people in, and we would take care of all their expenses. So a really smart, talented entrepreneur would come to collaborate with us, and instead of paying them, we would take care of all their expenses. So all their housing would be taken care of. They would live in the art mansion. They would work 4 days a week and take 3 days a week completely off, just relax, go do whatever. And all their cooking, all their cleaning, all their chores were taken care of, so they had nothing to worry about.
Except for, you know, really putting in a lot of high-quality, passionate work, and then recharging when that was done, so...
Yeah. And so that was the idea. And it, you know, the first pass, like Ben said, it was definitely a learning experience. But we think that we're onto something here, because everyone that works on these projects is just so happy while we're working on the projects. And the outside support that we've been getting from people has been really high. So we made this People in Motion project. It's a film project that basically follows these incredible athletes that move through the world in an interesting way. And we put together just a 2-minute trailer. And from that trailer, we were able to raise nearly $11,000.
Kickstarter, which is, you know, fabulous. If you're not familiar with it, it's an awesome site for putting together, especially art projects, but also gadgets and just raising support and funding for it. You know, I think it enables a lot of people to kind of pursue things that otherwise they would have to, you know, figure out a kind of a patron, right?
Yeah.
Or instead of having to hit somebody up for $10,000 to make a movie, now you can have tons of, just hundreds of individuals, right, giving us $20, $30, and it really adds up, so.
Yeah, it's a really neat way to decentralize fundraising. And it's not just fundraising. You can have people pre-order whatever it is that you're creating, etc.
Yeah. Anyway, kind of the thing I like the most about our experience, right, at the Nerdatorium was this notion that, you know, people always have this metaphor for, oh, you're just a cog in the machine. If you're, you know, you're looking for the man who's a replaceable piece, it's like a factory system, you know? And so I was thinking, what's the opposite of a cog? Because a cog is just this piece of machinery that'll chug along and then wear out, right, and has to be replaced. And the opposite of that, right, is something like a permaculture, which is an idea that I'm into a lot, we've talked about, but it's this idea of, instead of a farm where you just produce a crop, you have actually a self-sustaining ecosystem that continues to produce an abundant supply of food just as a function of it being a growing thing. And it feels like the kind of work style we had at the Nerdatorium was less like this piece of equipment that's going to wear out, and more that you had, you know, each individual had a meaningful impact. They were growing as people and as professionals, like both in terms of the work they were doing. Everyone, I think, grew in their technical skills. And I know everyone also had a lot of really personal, meaningful insights throughout the process. So I think that that's such a more powerful metaphor for work, because it's this growing thing, this living thing, and it ends up being able to sustain you without it, you know, becoming this onerous mechanical activity.
Yeah, to give an example, if you go to Google and you type in People in Motion Kickstarter, you'll find a link to our project. And essentially what we did is we had this crazy vision, had no idea how we were going to do it, but we just dove right in. And along the way, we created technology, two interesting pieces of technology. One was a motion controller. So these motion controllers typically go for like $200,000 to a couple million bucks. And we created one that essentially cost about like $100.
Yeah. I think the lowest entry-level market, or entry-level one, was $2,200. And I think we could probably, if we went to go mass producing, we could probably produce them for like $300.
So yeah, so we created this technology. It was really just homebrew tech that really cost us very little to create, but it allowed us to do these really incredible things. And I guess the point I'm driving at is we had no idea how we were going to do this thing. All we knew is that we had this vision that we wanted to create, and we all dove in. And in that process of just saying, okay, we don't know how we're going to do this, but we're confident we can figure it out, that process is a really interesting one, because you end up going, really end up growing so much further from that attitude.
Yeah, because it wasn't just like, oh, this is an interesting project. It's actually something that none of us had any idea how to do.
Yeah.
Right? None of us had built a motion control before. I mean, I know you've done a little kind of film work in the past, but it wasn't kind of the same. You've never done a sports film, certainly, with a lot of dynamic action. And, you know, I'd never worked on electrical devices before, and then programming a microcontroller.
Yeah.
So, just everybody kind of was able to step out of their experience at the same time and kind of make their own way, you know, as opposed to this kind of formulaic, very structured approach that you see of that with most peers, you know. You sit down, you come up with some commitments for the year, and then you have your weekly planning meeting, and everything is so rationed almost, you know.
Yeah, you know, the thing that you find in the corporate world is that you have sort of technicians, right? Even really well-paid technicians. Doctors, for example, are typically viewed as technicians, as people who have these really great specific skills. You know, a surgeon will typically specialize, and they'll understand how to perform this thing in a repeatable way and how to deal with some variables. And I think the key difference of our approach in the Nerdatorium was that none of us really had any idea of what the hell we were doing, but we knew that we wanted to get to this place that none of us had ever been before.
Yeah.
And often I think that with the projects that we're approaching, no one really has ventured too far into or really done some of the things that we're thinking about.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the advantage of being the newcomer, right? Or having no idea about some of the things you're doing, because you don't have, you know, obviously if you want to be a doctor, it's very obvious how you do that, right?
There's a path
that's
been laid out.
If you want to be an anesthesiologist, it's very obvious. But, you know, if you want to do some compositing shots with a motion controller and don't have any money, that's like, you know, nobody's... It's not a very well-known field, right? So how you have that together, kind of the novelty of your solutions kind of comes from the fact that you don't have those preconceived plans.
One thing that we really learned in Microsoft, you know, back, gosh, I guess it's about a year for you, right?
It's more than that for me, but
I guess about 7 months for me is, you know, large corporations are sort of burdened with this bureaucracy where there are a lot of people and each person is part of a committee that makes a decision about how you're going to move forward. Whereas with us, we're such a small team. The Nerdatorium is just, you know, a couple of people that you're able to move really quickly.
And obviously we're by no means the first people to recognize this. It's just the fact that it used to be that these large organizations had an advantage because the things they're doing were so complex, you really needed a big team.
Yeah.
And now it's, I think it's a change in technology in the economy. Oh, hey.
Hey, guys, we have our friend here.
Yeah.
What's your name, sir?
Oh, it's Mauran.
Say hi to the camera. This is going on iTunes.
Yes. He's bringing us many delicious drinks.
So we're having happy hour here on Gili Trawayang. It's a little island on the outskirts of Indonesia. And we've got sugar-free mojitos. And what did you order, Ben?
It's basically rum and sugar with some lime juice.
And which one is Tidak Sugar?
Sugar.
No sugar?
Yeah.
Which one?
The pink ones.
Okay. So TDOC means no in Bahasa, which is the primary language here. So we've learned a little tiny bit of Bahasa. Thank you is terima kasih. Terima kasih.
Sama-sama.
Sampai jumpa. Okay.
What's your name?
My name is Sed, and this is Ben.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
Yeah.
Lombok.
Yeah.
You come from Lombok?
Yeah, from Lombok.
Yeah.
Why in the forest?
Puju? Cool. I've never been over to Lombok yet, okay. But I want to...
Where is that?
Right now we're over Scallywags.
Scallywags. Yeah. How long do you stay here?
1 month.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Almost done there.
Yeah. Okay. Terima kasih.
Where are you from?
San Diego, California.
California.
Yeah.
Seattle. So.
Lots of surfing, yeah?
Lots of good beaches there too, yeah.
Yeah.
Like football.
Football?
Yeah.
Soccer football?
Football. Yeah. That's an MU football club. That's an MU in English.
Oh, English football? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, very good. Who's your club?
What?
Who do you support? Do you know? What team?
A team in Lombok.
Oh, in Lombok? Oh, okay, okay.
Lagwarang team.
Lagwarang team?
Okay. This village.
Yeah.
Please enjoy.
Thank you.
Terima kasih. Thank you. Sampai jumpa. So,
what was I saying? Oh, yeah.
Oh, hold on. Let's get this camera fixed up again, and then we'll maybe get a little cheers going. There we go. Little cheers.
Cheers.
Hold on. I like how pink my drink is.
like a pink drink is too, so.
Oh, no, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's sugarless.
What's that? Do you know what the pink is?
Sorry, I was going to make a joke, but I won't.
That's right. Anyway.
Anyway. Not talking about the pinkness of my drink.
I was just saying that the idea that small agile teams that try new things, obviously that's what people are doing for a long time, right? It's just that today, with the technology that's available, and with, you know, it's all, a lot of the barriers that you had that you needed a larger organization to overcome are not an issue anymore.
Yeah.
Like, when I started doing the analytics work, we were able to go from nothing to having, a hosted service on the internet that was high availability in a couple of weeks. We didn't have to buy any equipment. We used Amazon cloud services, stuff like that. And 10 years ago, you'd have to have a major capital investment just to be able to get to that point.
Yeah.
So there's so many opportunities for people to kind of take try risks, things that maybe you have tried before and failed even, that are now possible.
Yeah, and that's sort of the opportunity that's sort of blossoming with these interesting events happening in the economy. You know, you've got all these amazingly talented young people who are graduating from colleges, and there's no opportunities waiting in the traditional model, right? You know, you've had a lot of bigger companies shake out what they consider their lower-tier employees,
yeah,
which for smaller companies are, very high-bar employees.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have all these slots that used to be available, which are being taken by rock stars, essentially.
And the other thing is, even if you are a rock star, specifically if you're a rock star, is the opportunity you can secure with a large company really what you want? You know, talking about Microsoft, I remember hearing stories as a kid of millionaire secretaries and janitors because they happened to have some stock options and then the thing blew up, right?
Yeah.
And there's not that opportunity there anymore. I mean, obviously there will be other companies, but the whole Wild West era of the frontier, of a technological frontier where a BMW is a signing bonus, like those days are over.
Yeah.
And I think you can get so much more out of your time and your life just if you are in more control of how you're getting, making your money.
Yeah, a good friend of ours who will remain nameless, we'll call him Bill M. He, he broke it down for us when we were still at Microsoft. He's like,
it's a she.
Yeah. So, good friend. He called out, he's asked us the question, what's the dynamic upside of staying at Microsoft? What will you get that is incrementally better than if you were to go off and do your own thing? If you're an entrepreneur, right, your potential earnings, they go like this. Whereas at a company, you kind of slowly make more and more. I mean, even Microsoft is a fantastic company in terms of, a company versus other companies in that traditional model.
Oh,
like,
sure.
You can make 20% increases in pay every year. You can get really nice bonuses, but your path is still very linear.
It kicks the shit out of bartending, and they have awesome benefits. Like when I had crashed my snowboard and blacked out and had to go to the hospital, it would have been like a $6,000 bill, but they just it's like, oh yeah, cool.
I think you should explain the story to the viewers at home.
I just did. I'd just been snowboarding for a little over a year, and it was my first time up for the season. It was right after Thanksgiving. And it was an easy run. I was just coming down near the bottom where it was getting all flat, and it was later in the day, so the sun was getting low, and I was like, oh, it's really beautiful. And then the next thing I know, I'm just in an ambulance. And apparently something had happened where I blacked out, ended up taking off my snowboard, throwing it away, because I figured I didn't need that anymore. And radioed my friend, telling him I had a concussion, he should come try to find me. And he was able to, fortunately. And, called the ambulance.
All right, give me a second. We've become unplugged. We're plugging ourselves back in. Bear with us. Bam! And we're plugged back in.
You can always edit out some of these weird...
I kind of like the idea of, a streaming voice.
Streaming
it's very honest,
It is.
I sort of dig that. All right. We're both kind of in there.
All right.
Still recording.
Yeah.
How's your drink, by the way?
It's tasty.
Nice.
It's very sweet, though. Like, you would go into a coma if you had it.
So for the viewers at home, I don't do well with sugar. Sugar's kind of like my crack, so I just tell people I'm diabetic and try to avoid sugar at all costs, or else I go insane.
But an interesting question, though, why you can have alcohol anyway. Because usually if you're diabetic, you don't want to drink a lot. So.
Yeah, but none of them have ever.
Right, yeah, it's not.
They just let me get away with it. The cool thing about actually asking for diabetic meals on an airplane if anybody's looking to hack how to get a meal quickly on an airplane, is by saying you'd like a diabetic meal, they'll actually deliver your meal first before anyone else.
Just to make sure you get there at once?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty interesting. I'm hungry, I'm diabetic. Give me some food.
Yeah, give me some food. And they'll typically give you your food like 30 minutes before they'll feed anyone else.
It reminds me of like the old Sanford something. Where, like when you get all worked up, it's like, oh, this is the big one, Elizabeth. It's like, you're just hungry on a plane, you just make a scene like, oh, I'm going to go into coma. Somebody give me some chicken. Which doesn't even help if you're diabetic, so anyway. Enough of a rant.
So we've gone through one cycle of the Nerdatorium. And we consider it a success. We were able to raise $10,000 to make a film, which is getting some interest from Hollywood, actually, which is really exciting. And we were able to build two products, which we used in the filming of this movie, and which we're going to be taking to market in a few months here.
Yep.
And we're actually planning on our next Nerdatorium, which we're thinking about doing in Austin.
Yeah. Austin, Texas is a great city. I was down there for South by Southwest this year. You know, kind of, I know a bunch of people down there, so we basically just decided to not buy any passes and just try to sneak into everything, which went really well. Like, we saw a lot of really good stuff, and I was only there for the music portion, though. I'd like to go back and check out the interactive stuff, because, you know, it's really relevant to my interests, yeah. I say, on the internet.
Yeah, and so we've got sort of this problem in that we have a lot of ideas, probably too many ideas.
Yeah.
And, you know, our thing is we've always been great at starting, which is kind of conducive to the Nerdatorium model of quick projects, you know,
yep.
3 to 6 months max. And so, you know, the thing that's going to be interesting is how the Nerdatorium evolves. Because in the past, we tried to focus on one sort of item at a time, and we quickly made three items, you know, three projects instead of one. So going into this next Nerdatorium, we might mix it up a bit.
Yeah, I think the other beautiful thing about it is that I know you and I both have tons of ideas, but I know we're not alone in that. You know, good ideas are almost a dime a dozen. You know, maybe not Google good, like Google's a really, you know, world-changing idea, but tons of people have amazing ideas every day, and it's all about execution. You know, it's about being able to take even a mediocre idea and actually see it through that really gets you to the goal of having something, right? Yeah. And I think the Nerdatorium model is really, really, really good for that, because you can bring in these people who are just obsessed with ideas and always, like, you know, who are just always sketching them down, and just say, you know what, take a break from the rest of your world for 3 months and just chase some ideas and see what comes out of it.
You know, one of the things that, you know, we've talked about in the past, we haven't mentioned this podcast yet, is this idea of a tribe. You know,
yeah.
You spend so much time with the people that you work with, they sort of become a second family. And in a lot of ways, you spend more time with them than you will with your actual family. And when you think about how we're wired as human beings, we have this enormous social need. And so when people are really fulfilled at work, it's usually a big part of that is because they really connect with people at work.
Have you actually heard of Gore Industries? It's the McGore-Tex, like all the all that stuff. And they have a really interesting model where each office is limited to 150 people.
The Dunbar number, right?
Yeah, because that's the number of people that you can like actually hold in your mind as people you really know, as opposed to people you just are familiar with.
Yeah.
So by limiting the size of their individual facilities like that, everybody knows everyone, and everyone has a real human connection. And so you end up having, like, avoiding a lot of the bureaucratic nightmare of modern organizations, because you don't have to have committees, you don't have to have, you know, inner, like, unit communication schemes. You just, everybody kind of keeps up with the,
yeah, that's
the
Bill.
Gossip, right? Yeah. And it's not even just, oh, it's Bill, hey, he's cool, I know him. It's also, that's also the size of the circle that things will just communicate themselves naturally in.
Yeah.
So when there's a change or when there's an idea or something has to happen, you know, you'll hear about it because everybody knows exactly who they should go to.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, one of the things that we're trying to do, that we're trying to aim for, is this idea of having a group of people that you, as you progress through this project, you get closer with them, and you have this shared experience where you have this crazy idea and then you all struggle together to make it a reality. And we think that there's some magic in that.
Yep.
That there can be really good personal satiety. Is that the word? Where you're satisfied?
Yeah, satiety.
You know, when I was at Microsoft,
awesome.
Yeah, I was at Microsoft for 3 years, and the people there, they're fantastic people. Just want to put that on the table. But I didn't really connect with a lot of people that I was working with. You know, I didn't always believe in the projects I was working on. And those are two things that we're really trying to nail down, is having people really do things that they're really invested in, not just monetarily. We should focus on that. Yeah. So just as a side note, the way that the Nerdatorium operates financially is we have completely even distributions of equity. So even though we're not paying our nerds anything, not only are we taking care of all of their life expenses, but we're also giving them a complete equal share of equity.
Yeah, so everybody working on a project is an equal partner, plus the Nerdatorium is kind of a silent partner, which any profits that come off of the project, they then it's reinvested into running future sessions.
Right, and really the ultimate goal of the Nerdatorium, which we probably should have said right up front, is that just as we've been able to sort of escape the corporate world, we hope that every nerd that collaborates with us is also able to get out. Basically, that they have enough passive income coming out of these projects that they now have the freedom to either keep coming back and collaborating with the Nerdatorium, or to just
do what
chilling
want.
Out on a tropical island like we're doing right now. Can I get a cheers to that?
Yeah, cheers, man. Yeah, you say, you know, that you're kind of semi-retired, right? That's a really good way to put it, because it's not like, you know, we both had some success in the entrepreneurial world, but nothing like, you know, we're not like, you know, Facebook. This is like sickeningly rich.
You know, we just have enough resources to play indefinitely.
We have enough to kind of keep us going, to cover the costs and let us explore a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, enough for now. Obviously, if you want to have a family and stuff, you're going to need to make more money later, but...
But that's sort of the point, isn't it? Is that there's this weird space that's kind of opening up in this post-college era where people are having families later and later in life, and there's sort of this age range when you're in your 20s where you no longer have to rush into having a family.
Yep.
You can actually take a lot of risks when you're younger, so that, you know, even if you're not necessarily successful, you're not risking as much as you would later on in life, which you have a family and a mortgage, etc.
Yeah, and I mean, the risk, like the price of failing now is so low that, you know, that a lot of people are afraid of risk because it's natural to be afraid of risk, but it's not rational. Mm. But if you really look at what are you actually risking, and it's not that much. So it's basically, I mean, Seth Godin, I know someone we both like, and you've read his book, Lynchpin, right?
Yeah.
That's basically all it is about.
You gave me that book.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, that seems familiar.
Where did that go?
But yeah, I mean, that's what the book's about, pretty much, is overcoming the irrational, just like built-in instinctual fear that you have of things.
Speaking of Seth Godin, I recently stumbled upon another book that you recommended, which is his book on ideas, The Idea Virus.
Yeah.
And right at the beginning, he calls out that, you know, 200 years ago, the thing to own was farms. 100 years ago, the thing to own was a factory. Nowadays, the thing to really own is ideas.
Yeah.
Because if you can come up with a contagious idea, and you can be the person that's creating the vehicle of this idea, whether it's Facebook or something else, and, you know, Xbox or whatever.
Or even just like, you know, in a world where all products are kind of, all physical products are kind of converging towards being commodities, where design all of a sudden becomes really the value. So it's like, a car is a car is a car, and it'll get some decent gas mileage, but then if it's just really elegantly, functionally designed inside, that's what sets it apart. And that's really just an idea, right?
Yeah.
Because it's a mode of interacting with this physical object.
It's like a phone is a phone is a phone until the iPhone came along.
Right. Yeah. And now all phones are iPhones.
We're trying to be some variation, yeah. You know, one of the things that's really funny is when you start to look at how humans work in general and the projects that we've even been creating and the projects that we're continuing to create is, it seems like all humans, no matter how successful they are in life, they kind of do two things. They experience life, and they share their experience. Even if it's something as simple as, how was your day? Oh, my day was crap. I got hit by a car and then flew into a wall. And you're always collecting experience and sharing stories.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that a lot of our projects so far have sort of been a little bit about storytelling, whether it's capturing a film or presenting a film or having technology to do something with a film.
I think that, you know, I think it's just because it's something we both have a natural interest in. But also, made me think of, that's part of why the session at the Nerdatorium, excuse me, was so kind of fulfilling, right, is because it was a lot of stories, right? It's even just going there is a story. It's like, what have you done for the last 3 months? Oh, well, I was off at this, you know, random art collective in San Diego working on some projects with a story.
Yeah.
But it's also, it's much more memorable, yeah. The actual process.
We've got a visitor. Let's see. Ladies and gentlemen, say hello. Say hi.
I'm ugly.
Oh, no, you're beautiful.
I'm so beautiful. Yeah. I'm sad because I'm ugly.
Oh, no, you're so humble.
Ladies, here's a man. Come visit him on Gilly Tea.
Yes.
He's a very nice man. He brings us drinks. We're very happy with him. Terimakase, Sampa Jumpa. So, in case you're wondering, Sampa Jumpa means see you later in Bahasa, which, again, is the local language of the island. There's a drink back here somewhere.
Wow. That was just like a...
It's magic.
Out of frame, right into the face. Like.
Would you like a little bit? It's very good. It's refreshing, huh?
Cheers.
Yeah, but, I'm totally with you, man, because this idea that the Nerdatorium dramatically expands your story, you know, so many people get together and like, oh, you know, what do you do? You know, and that's such a strange question because it's like, oh, I am fill in the blank. And it's usually I am something that you recognize and you have some understanding of what that means about me as a person. With a Nerdatorium, it's such a foreign concept for so many people.
Yeah, I think one of my like ways I know I'm doing well in life is it's the harder it is for me to explain that in one sentence, like the more happy I am generally speaking.
So how do you explain what you do with the Nerdatorium?
Well, that's the thing. It's like, so it's either the harder it is for me to explain meaningfully in one sentence. So I can say, like, at the Nerdatorium, I'm the head ninja. Like, and you know what? Fuck it, I am, because I can be whatever I want to be because we started. But that doesn't mean anything to anyone. So I say, well, you know, we have this nomadic sort of incubator where we're trying to help people have more meaning in their work and quit their day jobs so they can find the freedom of life. It's like, well.
It's like, that's quite a mouthful. Yeah.
It is. And it's all of a sudden what you do isn't. It's not a noun, it's like a story, right? There's an arc to what you do, which means you're doing something different because, you know, humans are namers, right? So we have names for everything, and those are just handles for concepts. And obviously, if something is new you've never encountered before, you have no name for it.
Yeah.
So it's a way I tell if I'm on the right track is if I can't name exactly what I'm doing.
I dig it, man. Yeah, so how long have we been recording? For about 30 minutes?
Yeah, I think...
You want to put the cap on?
Yeah, I think if anyone's left, you brave souls, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. We're going to try to record at least one or two of these a week.
Yeah, I think start off with one, get a feeling for it, maybe try to then start rounding up some guests and do a guest episode every week. That'd be cool.
Yeah, definitely. If you want to check us out, you can see our blog at thenerdatorium.com.
Yeah.
And feel free to send us mail. You can leave us comments on thenerdatorium.com and give us ideas for future projects. If you're interested in being a nerd, reach out to us.
Yeah,
we're always scouting for talented people who are fun to collaborate with.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's all I got, man. All
right, man. Signing off. Cheers. See you guys in a few.